Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. The Colley neighborhood in northeast Portland is one of Portland's most racially diverse neighborhoods, with many children and families, and it's a haven for urban farmers. But it is also home for some of Portland's most polluting industries. Recently, the Owens Brockway glass recycling plant located in Colley has been in the crosshairs of neighborhood and environmental justice activists, as well as the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, for continuing to release harmful amounts of nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, and lead into the surrounding environment. This ongoing pollution impacts three nearby schools and a park. Today, we talk with Ashley Bennett with Earth Justice and Sergio Lopez with Verde about how the pressure they've been putting on Owens Brockway is beginning to pay off. Sergio and Ashley, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thanks for having us.
So I wanted to start by talking about the Colley neighborhood, which is not a neighborhood that gets featured in the New York Times or the New Yorker magazine when people are writing these glowing articles about Portland. So what is the Colley neighborhood and what sets it apart from what the mainstream thinks of Portland, Oregon?
Yeah, thank you. That's a really great question. So the Colley neighborhood is a northeast Portland neighborhood. It's the largest neighborhood in the city of Portland by area and population. It's over 3 square miles long and wide. It is also the highest and most diverse neighborhood in the state of Oregon. I think as of 2 years ago, pre-pandemic, I believe it was 48% were households qualified as free reduced lunch, a lot of renters. And I think with that being said, it is also highly industrial, considering that it's also zoned residential. Northeast Lombard and Columbia Boulevard are two highways and artery roads that are main uses for a lot of medium and heavy duty transportation cargo trucks. The Portland International Airport is zoned right above Colley, and you have a lot of industrial warehouses, which was one of them that we'll be talking about today, that are essentially a source of high pollutants for the neighborhood. I think within the demographics of residents living in Colley, it has a huge Latin American, specifically Yucatan, which is in Mexico, a southern state that borders Guatemala, which is a Central American country. A lot of residents from those areas, Latin America, that reside in Colley neighborhood, and a large Somalian population as well, which is African descent. So with that being said, you know, it's about 50, I can't remember specifically pre-pandemic statistics, but it's about 50-some percent identify as BIPOC, which I think you compare those numbers to somewhere in LA or New York. That is very weak numbers for diversity, and that right there is an indicator of how white the state of Oregon is, and how excluded the Colley neighborhood has been when it comes to allocation of resources and funding opportunities for a lot of neighborhoods compared to inner city Portland that, you know, that we're more aware of as we read in the New York Times, et cetera.
One of the things that struck me when I first started hanging out in Colley, which was a number of years ago, was that it was a center for urban farming. That was one of my first introductions to the neighborhood, was going and visiting these really cool urban farms there. And people had large yards, almost acreage, that they could grow vegetables and they had animals. And the other thing that struck me was that there were, at that time, no parks, no services, no community gathering centers. Some of that has been addressed, and we'll get to why that has, but I will just say that I went to an amazing rally last spring at the Colley Park, which was my first time there, and that is one of the most phenomenal parks in Portland. And so we can maybe talk about how that happened as part of this whole movement to get Colley out of under the radar and into the radar in Portland.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. And I will add, with that being said, I apologize, is huge rural elements in the neighborhood of Colley, as you mentioned. A lot of lots, a lot of property, and vegetable beds and community gardens are a huge characteristic of the neighborhood.
So let's talk about the environmental justice side. And I want to bring Ashley in, who's with Earth Justice. As a representative of this organization that's been fighting on the legal front for environmental justice in neighborhoods just like Colley, what do you see that are the most striking problems in Colley, and how are you trying to address that?
I think The most striking concerns in Cully are really the concentration of a lot of these big polluters in the city and in the state that are concentrated in that area, along with the level of diesel emissions that are coming into the area as well. And so, you know, part of the real problem in, I would say, Oregon, generally speaking, has been the lack of enforcement when it comes to the air permits that these facilities have. And then also how weak some of those permits have been in the past. So we're really working to not only elevate the concerns of communities like Cully, and really push regulators to address those concerns through strengthening permits and strengthening different air programs. For instance, like the Clean Air Oregon program that has recently been rolled out in Oregon. But also, like I said, working directly with DEQ to get those concerns addressed and get our partners and residents and the residents of neighborhoods like Cully in front of regulators to be like, hey, we need these things done. So I think that that's just a little bit of what we've been doing in Oregon, specifically to address the concerns in communities like Cully.
Before we get into talking about Owens Brockway, which is the polluter du jour for this show, I wanted to talk about some of the other problems that have been real endemic in Cully. And I think for me, one of the most vivid ones was this incredible black cloud that rose in the sky. I think it was in 2017 or 2018. And you could see it head, you know, from inner city Portland, you could see it off to the northeast. And it took me a while to figure out. I was actually driving to Cebu that morning when I saw it. And I was heading north, and I kept thinking maybe that Buckman neighborhood was on fire. And then I finally found out it was the Cully neighborhood, where there was a huge metal recycling place that was on fire. And that actually seemed to me to bring Cully a little bit more into the forefront than it had been previously. So let's talk a little bit about that fire and maybe how that was a wake-up call for looking at all these other problems that have been such an issue at Cully for so many years.
It's actually fascinating you bring that up, because during that instance, I was working for another organization, and I was managing a program with residents in Cully. I think that's when I was wearing multiple hats within the community. I was working for an organization called Forth that focused on electric transportation for low-income communities. So there's like electric bicycle program that was being facilitated within that community. And then I was working with the Community Cycling Center, which is a Portland nonprofit bike shop in Northeast, and they sponsor a community group in Cully called ABC, which is Andando Bicicletas in Cully at the time. So when that occurred, I mean, a lot of the focus work that I was looking at was CO2 pollutant related, because the emphasis of the work was zero emissions and active transportation and more like community building within that scope of work. But when that occurred, that was my first, as you mentioned, Barbara, that was my first like insight and realization of the issues of air quality within Cully that not only related to transportation emissions, but other resources as well, such as that fire. And obviously there's other facilities in the neighborhood that, you know, whether it's glass recycling or aluminum manufacturing, and there's also been tire burnages, I guess is the best way to say it, within that are, you know, polluting out like strong hazardous air issues for communities that are low income and that are already have a not only social disparity, but also like a medical and a well-being disparity within that social construct.
The car recycling facility that caught on fire was actually, as I understand, working either without permits or violating its permits. And I wonder if that is a big issue in Cully, that there are more businesses like that that are really in violation of what would be considered regulations, enforceable regulations in other parts of Portland.
Yeah, and I think one huge component to the result of that is a lot of these companies and a lot of these facilities and businesses have been operating for decades. I think. And these, you know, this is back in the 1950s post-World War II, when a lot of the policies were super outdated in terms of, you know, social implications and also just embedded racism that at the time wasn't seen as racism. And I think we are now seeing the effects of those old embedded racial policies that are now affecting BIPOC communities. And I think Owens Brockway, which we'll speak about more thoroughly, is an example of that permit being 100% outdated. And I believe this, I don't know too much internally about the 2017 incident on paper, but it's safe to say that there are some loopholes there that were no longer relevant to today's policies.
Well, how was it that the Cully neighborhood, which was so overlooked and came kind of trampled on by industrial interests in Portland, how is it that people have come together and started to really resist what's been going on historically for decades and that have really stood up in this case to Owens Brockway?
Cully neighborhood has a really strong community, like strong force, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, there's, I think it has a very unique community like group to it. You know, I think everyone knows each other. Everyone knows who the new residents are and everyone knows who, you know, everyone knows who and who is for the most part. And I think one of the things that Verde does that is very strong is we want to really amplify the voices of the community members and their anecdotes and their testimonial experiences to these issues. And we also want to provide education, you know, a lot of the things, for example, Owens Brockway and this whole process, like what these terms actually mean. And what's the best way that they can, like how can we best put them in a position to amplify their voice to make an actual effect, you know, on the bureaucratic system. And I think, I think growing up in a low income household myself and only speaking Spanish up until second grade, I experienced a lot of similar issues with my family, but we never really were given any opportunity to kind of learn and be involved in the community. And a lot of the parents that I work with in Cully that speak Spanish, I'm really impressed because I asked them why they do this work, and the majority of them answered that they want to be a good role model for their kids and they want them to live a healthier life. And as redundant as these programs and these issues are, they still don't give up. And I find that very fascinating, that they have a very resilient lens on moving forward to pushing for change. And I think this Owens Brockway situation is becoming light of that. And it's just a strong community. It's a resilient community that doesn't take no for an answer.
Well, there's a report that came out a few weeks ago, Owens Brockway, an environmental justice problem in Portland. And I wanted to get a sense about how Earth Justice got involved with this and what your role is in speaking, providing another voice for this community to speak up in defense of itself.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And I just want to clarify that, you know, we really don't provide the voice. We kind of help amplify the voice. I think that that's one of the great things about, you know, us being able to partner with so many different community local organizations is that their voices and are centered, and that and what they want and who they represent are how is basically how we decide we move forward, you know, in the process. So our involvement actually started from Verde. Verde reached out to us along with a couple of other local community organizations about concerns around on the Owens Brockway facility. At the time, the facility was up for renewal of its air permit, and I think that was in 2018. And so we looked at the air permit, and the facility was operating on an expired permit before they went up to for renewal for about 5 years. So that's quite some time to be operating on an expired permit. And we looked at it and we found that the permit did not have, was completely inadequate, excuse me, as far as ensuring that the facility Owens Brockway was actually meeting its pollution control obligations. So that's kind of how we got involved on Owens Brockway, and then proceeded to then petition EPA, who oversees this air permitting program to object to the air permit because it was inadequate. And we actually last spring, in May, received to our surprise an objection from EPA. They object to the permit, saying, yes, this is inadequate in part, and DEQ must rewrite it.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, KODX, LPFM, KMUN, and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Ashley Bennett with Earth Justice and Sergio Lopez with Verde about environmental justice struggles in the Northeast Portland Cully neighborhood and how one of the neighborhood's largest polluters is being forced to either stop polluting or shut down. And we're going to get to that exciting development in a little bit. But before we go on, I actually wanted Sergio to talk a little bit about Verde, the organization that you're with now, and what role do they play in the Cully neighborhood?
Verde is a nonprofit 501c3 that began back in 2005. Our mission statement reads, Verde serves communities by building environmental wealth through social enterprise, outreach, and advocacy. Those three terms, social enterprise, outreach, and advocacy. So social enterprise can be more related to Verde Builds. That is a basically construction firm that we have within our programs team. And we used to also have a landscaping firm, and that's how Verde initially began actually in 2005. But that had to be put to rest because of the pandemic, unfortunately. But Verde Builds still moves forward, and Verde Builds basically facilitates a lot of the construction, whether it's, for example, Cully Park with Parks and Rec. That was a work that Verde Builds led to create that community space. Right now, Verde Builds is focused more on community solar programs for low-income housing, ductless heat pump installations, also for low-income housing, covering the overhead costs of those of that equipment, which essentially is a bang for your buck when it comes to energy usage for your home to cool and keep cool and keep warm, both during, you know, whichever season you prefer. And then outreach is obviously doing a lot of the community organizing, a lot of the programs, and boots on the ground, as they say, interacting with the community members, doing programs such as Líderes Verdes, which translates to green leaders, and that's one specific to what I was mentioning earlier, and helping community individuals build these soft and hard skills on communication, organizing, learning about the context of the policies, a little more difficult things that can be tricky when you read bureaucratic paperwork, things like that, and just, you know, building that community lens within Cully. And then advocacy is pushing forward towards more progressive policies, such as the most recent victory in this past legislative session was the Energy Affordability Act, is, you know, finding ways to create and subsidize energy bills depending on income base. Which energy is, you know, should be a right. It should be it's something that we all utilize no matter where we are. And the way we pay for it should also be very inclusive and be very just on how we utilize that. So with that being said, you know, we have a lot of different pockets of work. And at the end of the day, what we want is the neighborhoods that we work with to have an environmental sustainable and just way of living without paying too much of a high price, because a lot of these tools that we are seeing now that are solar, that are energy, that are transportation, that are related to energy, such as electric vehicles and charging stations, these things are super expensive, and it's not, and, you know, for the average person it's already difficult to acquire. So for a low-income household that, you know, is lacking education resources and even just the language itself is even more difficult. So Verde wants to make sure that it is providing the right resources for the folks that we are embedded with. And with that being said, you know, half of our staff lives in Cully. Half of our staff speaks Spanish fluently, primarily. And so we kind of, you know, we're based in Cully, but that doesn't mean that we only work in Cully. I think the fact that if we can do this work in Cully, it means we could do it across the state of Oregon as well.
I was thinking as you're talking that the Cully neighborhood in a way reminds me of Richmond, California, where I spent a bunch of time in the last few years. And it's another neighborhood that's very, very diverse, multicultural, predominantly BIPOC, has major industry, actually, a lot larger than Cully. They've got a huge Chevron refinery, which catches fire every few years. And it's been interesting, as I was working in Richmond about 10 years ago, discovering how in a way, the impressiveness about that of that community has generated an amazingly progressive community. And there's all kinds of institutions and organizations that really counter the influence of Chevron and the other fossil fuel industries that have dominated Richmond historically. I'm wondering if you see those parallels in Cully, and I wonder if it what it is about facing the challenges that a neighborhood like Cully or a city like Richmond, California face. How does that, in a way, engender a very strong progressive core?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't know too much about Richmond. I've heard of Richmond, but I don't know too much. But yeah, I think the biggest thing right now, I think with that being said, is something that we're all pretty aware of is like the housing market in the past year and a half, 2 years now, and how much that took an effect. And seeing how that has been unrolled in Cully as well, I think is something more relevant. And not to get too political, but I think it's sometimes fascinating. The last 2 years has brought a lot of challenges. I think the housing market is one component that is there. Work within TIF district, but then also just the pandemic itself, of how community members have been interacting with each other, vaccine rollout, and the perspectives on that. I think at the end of the day, it's heartwarming to know that that the community believes in good change and that they are going to listen to the science behind these issues and follow with that and move forward for the positive change that we need. And I think that has had a lot of progressiveness to it for sure.
When you talk about the housing issues, I mean, what is happening with the housing market in particular that's affecting Cully?
I think gentrification obviously is an issue that we've all seen in our own way, no matter where we live. Portland has been a big one. I think the irony that a lot of these lots in Cully were up for sale, you know, mid-pandemic for an insane amount, $700,000, you know, for an adobe building and an acre of land, because that's what Cully is. And I think the irony that someone's coming and buying that, you know, from California cash in is difficult, because we want to make sure that no one's being displaced, no one's being, you know, forced to move out, that Cully remains Cully. A lot, like I mentioned, there's a lot of multicultural components to Cully, and I think why a lot of people live in this area is because it reminds them of home, it reminds them of where they're from. And I think, you know, if things start to change more too drastically and they get expensive, then it loses that charm, it loses the home of the people that call that home, that have called it home for decades.
This friend of mine yesterday texted me a photograph of Southeast Foster Road from 1974, which was 3 years after I moved to Portland. And I was living out in Sandy then, and I was driving down Foster Road a lot. And it brought back these memories of when Foster Road was farmland east of 122nd Street. And there's this value. I mean, there was a very beautiful thing about what was so close to the city limits of Portland in those days, because Portland didn't, city limits in those days were 82nd Street. And that there was so much agricultural land and kind of rural living. There were dairy farms out there. There was like all kinds of stuff that now it's not there anymore. And one of the things that's appealing to me about Cully is that there's still these remnants. It's kind of like a rural residential neighborhood with an overlay of industry, which was also Foster Road had its industry too, which is what's basically taken over what was once farms. How do we hold on to those values? Because I would hate to look at a photo of Cully 20 years from now and see, I remember when there were all these little urban farms and it's all gone now. I wouldn't want to have to see that. So what can be done about that?
I think that's a great question that I wish had a direct answer, but I think one good example that could get you close to an answer, an idea of some of these slippery slopes, as we call them, is like infrastructure, for example, is a main topic right now within this topic. And so we obviously believe in multimodal transportation infrastructure. So, you know, safe bike lanes for individuals, or sidewalks for kids to get to school. These are things that we are working with within, you know, PBOT, other organization that focus on walking routes, et cetera. But at the same time that like we are implementing tools that the community needs and wants, rather than doing things that just seem like they're gonna, you know, greenwash it away, such as EV charging stations. Like, we can't install EV charging stations now for many reasons, but I think for something inner city in Portland, for example, Like, a charging station is a great idea, but that's going to attract the person that has that Tesla, the person that has that $60,000 car, and it's going to start changing the dynamic of the neighborhood of Coley. You know, like, I don't, like, you don't see EVs in Coley neighborhood.
Not even Leafs, like 2015 Leafs?
See, I'm rolling through. Yeah, for sure. Definitely the Leafs. But I mean, that's the thing. It's like, once you start seeing Teslas and, you know, these newer, fancier, you know, 250 mile plus range vehicles, like, that, you know, top bottom tier is like 38K, you know, that just doesn't exist yet. So I think ideally it sounds great because it is a green way of living, but it's got to be applicable. And I think the infrastructure for greenways, for example, is a good example, because we want to focus on sidewalks. We want to focus on safe paved roads for residents. And then that could go in line with charging stations. But frankly, we're not there yet. So we don't want to put too much time and effort on focusing on that yet. But we are want to be involved in that EV ready code with the city. So when we are ready within 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whoever knows how long it'll take, you know, we'll be ready for that work, for it to be efficient.
Well, I wanted to get back to Owens Brockway, which is what we are ostensibly talking about today. So let's talk about why they are a particularly bad actor in Coley and what has been going on for years and years now that needs to be addressed.
I think, I'll start off with the main thing, and Ashley, if you wanted to go and feel free, but I think there's the difficult thing about Owens Brockway with the bad acting is the greenwashing. In terms that they are a recycling center, that they are in fact the only glass recycling center in Oregon. So with that being said, there's a rhetoric, there's a narrative that isn't false, but it's also not the main point of the argument. And that argument is that, you know, it is a local bone to the small businesses in the city of Portland, which is kombucha bottles, wine bottles, and beer bottles. That is a huge economy here in Portland. And that is not wrong. However, there's a bigger issue happening, that it is literally, you know, causing cancer to low income and people of color within Coley that don't have much to do or say about it. And I think Coley wants clean air. And I think the bad actor component to Owens Brockway is that they are recycling glass, and that has been their narrative to push forward with this work. Where the big issue is that we want clean air. And frankly, as Ashley has mentioned previously, it's been going on for years now, and nothing's been happening. And I think this press release that happened 3 weeks ago now is a huge step in the right direction. However, we're not done yet. We still have 8 months until this gets into effect. And 8 months is a long time, considering that other facilities in the city of Portland were given literally overnight to figure it out.
Do you want to add anything else, Ashley?
Yeah, I think Sergio did a good job of kind of summing up some of the real issues. I mean, the facility was built in 1956, so it didn't really have to adhere to some of the newer restrictions that are put on new facilities, right? Underneath the Clean Air Act, it was kind of grandfathered in. And so it has been able to emit large levels of lead, which, as I think people know, there's no safe level of lead that people can be exposed to. And it's been emitting, like I mentioned earlier, particulate matter and soot, sulfur dioxide and nitrogen. All those things can affect breathing and lung function. They can also irritate skin. You know, as the report mentions, there are residents whose kids have been adversely affected by the harmful air that is being caused in Coley from facilities like Owens Brockway. The facility has been able to operate like this for quite some time, because it seems like no one was really watching. I don't want to say no one was watching, because I do know that Coley residents have been trying to raise concerns for years. They just, unfortunately, no one was really listening. Like Sergio said, this is a great step in the right direction, but it only addresses one of those pollutants of concern, like I said, soot. But we are hopeful that Owens Brockway will want to, you know, continue to work with the community and continue to work with DEQ to address their sulfur dioxide emissions and their nitrogen oxide emissions. And the facility is also still going through the Clean Air Oregon program, which, you know, may require it to address its arsenic emissions, which were also alarmingly high when it was running both of its furnaces at the time.
You're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Ashley Bennett with Earth Justice and Sergio Lopez with Verde about environmental justice struggles in the Northeast Portland Cully neighborhood, and particularly the struggle to clean up or shut down the Owens Brockway glass recycling facility. Well, Ashley, how did Earth Justice get involved with the struggle here in Cully?
So Earth Justice is a nonprofit law firm organization, we really work with local community organizations, tribes, and other green, quote-unquote, organizations to ensure that, you know, the environment is protected, but that everyone has clean air, clean water, and a healthy environment. And so we actually got involved in Cully and on Owens Brockway specifically because Verde reached out to us, as well as other organizations, around concerns about Owens Brockway when the facility's air permit actually came up for renewal by DEQ. At that time, the facility had been operating on a permit that had expired for, I believe, 5 years. That's quite a long time to be running on a permit that should have been renewed years ago. We've been working with Verde and our other community partners ever since to not only strengthen the permit, but also to specifically reduce and address the harmful emissions coming from Owens Brockway.
So what shape does your work take? How are you connecting with Verde and with the neighborhood?
So our initial work actually was connected to the permit, as I mentioned. So when DEQ decided to put out a draft permit for renewal, what they allow is for public comment on that permit. And so We helped provide the legal and technical comments on the permit, basically saying that the permit that was being issued was inadequate to ensure that Owens Brockway was meeting its pollution control obligations. Unfortunately, at that time, DEQ didn't incorporate any of those concerns or requests for changes. But then we filed a petition with the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, who oversees this air permitting program, basically asking the agency to object to the permit because, as I mentioned, it was inadequate. We actually received recently, I believe it was in May, news from EPA that they objected to the permit and are requiring DEQ to rewrite the permit to, you know, strengthen it and ensure that the facility is actually going to meet its pollution control obligations. We've also been working with our partners speak directly with Owens Brockway about not only just concerns with their emissions, but also trying to work on solutions. I think that is some of the work that we've been doing. And then is indicated in the report that was just issued, we actually had an air modeler model emissions from the facility. He was basically able to pinpoint that the facility on its own was likely causing or contributing to a violation of national ambient air quality standards. And that is still an issue, even though Owens Brockway has shuttered one of its furnaces. So even with one furnace running, it is still likely causing or contributing to a violation of the National Ambient Air Quality Standards.
Well, I find it interesting that DEQ was going to sort of just pass on any objections to renewing the permit, which sounds kind of familiar. They've done that with a lot of other air permits for major polluters in the state. And I also find it interesting that it was the EPA that came through for you. I'm thinking if this had gone on a year earlier, do you think you would have gotten the same response from the EPA?
Yes. I think we would have got a different response, and I think that we were anticipating that we were going to get a different response. I mean, we filed the petition in 2019, and so we were very much under the impression that the administration that was in office at the time was likely going to reject our petition, and, you know, we were going to try to figure out next steps from that. But a new administration came into office, and, you know, we are very happy that, you know, they did the right thing and said, no, this permit is not up to snuff and needs to be redone.
Well, I'm thinking about DEQ's kind of checkered track record, whether it's allowing permits for fossil fuel transloading facilities in Columbia County or whether it's allowing Zenith Energy to continue to operate. Back when Zenith Energy first was setting up its facility to transload tar sands oil and Bakken oil, DEQ let it go by without making sure that it was doing some necessary steps in emergency response around transloading tar sands oil. So do you think that DEQ is learning from this and maybe in the future will be a little bit more proactive in actually regulating these industries?
Yes, I do believe that DEQ is really in the process of trying to figure out how to regulate these facilities. I do think that it's something that is new or newer to really try to use different levers of power to actually enforce the permits and ensure that they're doing their job in protecting public health. I do think that that is new. I think that the heightened pressure is also something that is new in a sense. You know, I think it also helped that there was a national spotlight that was put on Portland after the U.S. Forest Moss study. I think that that was also something that kind of, you know, pushed DEQ to say, no, we really need to take a closer look at what is going on with these facilities and ensure that we are protecting the public and especially communities like Cully that are overburdened by pollution, specifically in this case, air pollution.
Well, let's talk about the Forest Moss study. I mean, people might not be familiar with what you're talking about. And that also was in a neighborhood that is predominantly a white neighborhood. But let's talk a little bit about what that, the lessons in that were.
In, I believe it was 2016, the U.S. Forest Service conducted a moss study. And in that moss study, it was pretty novel. They were trying to determine whether or not they could, you know, detect air pollution using moss. And so what came out of that study was actually rather alarming. It actually revealed that there were heavy metal hotspots in Portland neighborhoods that surrounded two art glass makers. And these hotspots had gone undetected for years by DEQ. And monitoring that confirmed the moss study results showed that there were high levels of cadmium, which is a toxic metal that went 38 and 39 times beyond the state's safe air goals, which suggested in that particular area that there was going to be potentially an increased risk of cancer illness for people that were routinely in that specific area. This actually served, I believe, as a catalyst for the governor to add a new regulatory program to Oregon's existing air permitting framework, and that program is called Clean Air Oregon. It really focuses on air toxics, so things like lead, cadmium, and that is really the focus, and it is, I believe, something that is the first of its kind in the country because it is focused on public health. That is the focus of the program, as far like it is to ensure that it is reducing risk to public health.
I'm curious how much the governor was motivated by the fact that that plume went really close to her house in that nice, cushy neighborhood of Eastmoreland. It was interesting to me that there were two factories, and one of them was in a community that includes a lot more BIPOC people. However, the other one that was over just south of Powell is a much less diverse neighborhood. Do you think that maybe Kate Brown was a little bit nervous about this plume being so close to her?
I'm sure that probably played a factor. It may have played a huge role. I think as has, you know, been seen historically, when it comes to communities of color or low-income communities, unfortunately, they've kind of been left to fend for themselves. And so it's not until it affects communities that may have more white identifying folks in the community that action really starts to get going. And I think that that is something that I appreciate that Verde and other organizations in Portland and in Oregon are really trying to change.
Well, you listen to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM, KMUN, and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Ashley Bennett with Earth Justice and Sergio Lopez with Verde about environmental justice struggles in the Northeast Portland Cully neighborhood. And we've been talking particularly about Owens Brockway, a very large glass recycling plant that's been spewing out horrible toxins for, what, like 50, 60 years now into the Cully neighborhood. Sergio, I wanted to talk about some of the people in the neighborhood who have been leaders in really bringing this issue to the forefront. In your report, you focus on two women, two mothers, who are really concerned about their children developing asthma from playing soccer and other outside activities so close to where these toxins are just lingering. So can you tell us about some of the people you've met and worked with?
Yeah. And two of the people that were included in their report that Earth Justice put out about a month ago or so, Elizabeth, has been involved in two cohorts of Líderes Verdes, which translates again to green leaders. The first cohort was just more soft skills context. Second cohort was called Líderes Verdes Avanzados, which is like advanced. So a little more thorough with information. And she has been very, very in the front line, very, very involved on these issues and cares about the environmental benefit of her two kids. Coley Park, as we mentioned earlier, is literally probably four blocks away from Owens Brockway, and you can see it from Coley Park. You can see the smoke over it. And Coley Park has been now, not only does it have a community garden, but it has like four soccer fields. And that's where kids go to practice every Tuesday and Thursday, after school, etc. It's a bone to the community there in Coley. So she specifically has had issues with her youngest son on asthma issues. And our other community member, Wendy, she's been in the community for 20-something years now. And her youngest kid as well, Mario, has had very similar issues of watery eyes, track signs of asthma, and when she has had no asthma trace in her family at all. And I think with these issues, it's talked about a lot within the community that watery eyes, sneezing, you wash your clothes, you get it, you know, directly out of the dryer and it smells like downy, and you walk outside, the kids can run around for a couple hours or 30 minutes or an hour, whatever it is, they come back for dinner, and you can smell some strong component in the clothes, and it's, you know, it's not smoke, but it's simply something toxic, something kind of metally, something just not healthy. And And I think these issues are concerning because the doctors initially have always said, like, you know, there's allergies or there's symptoms, etc. But I think there is this long-term effect now that is affecting the lives of these individuals. I have a couple of coworkers as well that have spoken about that live right on Coley Boulevard. If anything, a little further away from the facility, but still in the Coley neighborhood, that have said, like, you could smell it on the clothes. When the kids go outside and ride their bikes and they'll come back, you could smell it. It's not a healthy smell.
How do you make that connection scientifically, that this smell on the clothes is actually contributing or the cause of the asthma and the runny eyes and all the other medical conditions that these kids are experiencing?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, you know, and that's something that I think would be really cool to kind of maybe dissect in the future with more funding and more opportunity. But I think it goes hand in hand with the physical health issues that these kids are experiencing. And these families are seeing the trend day in and day out. You know, whether it's the morning smog or their afternoon smog, when these kids are walking to school or coming back from school and during their evening activities outside, you know, and specifically parents change their clothes or t-shirts when they come home from school. And I think when they go back out for soccer practice, etc., it is a trend. And it doesn't even have to include forest fire season, you know, and that's another thing. So I think from what I've seen and heard and been involved in the community, you know, when you experience this every day, it's pretty evident that there is a pretty obvious connecting the dots situation happening. And Owens-Brockway is a huge source of that. And obviously, like I mentioned in the beginning of this conversational interview, there's other pollutants out there, you know. Coley has a lot of, it's very vulnerable.
Well, let's talk about the cumulative effect of all the polluters in Coley. And what is your plan? How are you going to address it once Owens-Brockway, which hopefully will shut down if they don't address their pollution issues. But let's talk about like the big picture about how do you clean up Coley so that when you go to Coley Park and you see those incredible views of Mount St. Helens and Mount Adams and Mount Hood, and then you see Owens-Brockway, how can we take Owens-Brockway out of that vista and have the air clear?
Yeah, so I mean, you take away Owens-Brockway and there's other things that we're doing. You know, my title is Energy, Climate, and Transportation Coordinator. The umbrella of that work is air quality. Regulation specifically, and programs and community building, and other issues are zero emission. And I think we're involved in rural advisory committees within DEQ as well, that, for example, the medium heavy duty truck rule that we're pushing and supporting, that DEQ implements a law, executive order that Governor Kate Brown put in last summer, to an X amount of medium heavy duty trucks to be electric, because those trucks, you know, they come through Columbia Boulevard, they come through Northeast Lombard, and that'll be a huge step, and that's a 5-10 year process even then, right? So the CO2 output from those trucks is also a huge component. There's other things that we want to focus more on as well that and do involve electric vehicles down the road, is making those and finding that in-state rebate incentive for low income to be larger and more accessible and easier. That's another one. And obviously the Energy Affordability Act. I think that's going to be a huge thing for solar to be affordable, for people to kind of mend in on that a little bit easier. And it seems more probable and seems more realistic rather than it being like a long-term game plan. I think that is the first step before we get to electric vehicles, before we get to people purchasing solar, you know, out of their own initiative, et cetera. And obviously the regulation of medium heavy duty trucks. And we're involved in a lot of RACs, as we call them, within DEQ. And I think, to be clear, we have a good relationship with DEQ. We work well together. And I think with this, Owens-Brockway has been a challenging component for them, and we appreciate the flexibility, but we want more pressure, and it's finally kind of happening. But I said kind of because it was still 8 months away, right? So with respect, you know, there's still a lot of work to do.
Well, what about that car recycling plant that caught fire a few years ago? Is that still pumping out pollutants?
100% honest, I don't have enough information to speak about that.
I mean, because there are a number of other industries. Owens-Brockway might be one of the worst, but there's still several industries. And the other thing that has concern for me is the oil trains that go through the neighborhood.
Yes, exactly. That's the scope of work that we're leaning on. There is the hydro extrusions plant, which is an aluminum manufacturing plant that is right there near the airport, is another one. There's a lot of other ones for sure. We're a grassroots nonprofit, so we're doing our best here.
Do you think that the neighborhood is more mobilized now than it was, let's say, 10 years ago?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
What's the difference? How does it feel different now than it did when you first got involved?
There's more community resources, it seems like. There's better communication. I think PBOT has done also a really good job in making sure that residents are being given more of a voice to make these calls on, like, which ones are actually, like, safe routes to school, for example, you know. There's also food box delivery as a COVID plan that occurred. I think there's more movement. There's more, there's kind of more enthusiasm. And I think there's different pockets of work within that. And some of them definitely decreased, but a lot of them have decreased. And they're kind of coming and going. And I think the pandemic was challenging for a lot of us. But at the end of the day, I think it's becoming richer. A lot of community events are still occurring. And, you know, we don't want to stop now.
Well, actually, the first time I went to a community event and hugged people was at that rally that the Brady River campaign put on in Culley Park last spring, because we'd all gotten our shots. It was before Delta came out. And it was a wonderful feeling. And I thought it was kind of nice that it happened in the Culley neighborhood. I mean, really, for a lot of us, it was the first time we'd been to that park and to see how things had changed. Well, one last thing, Ashley, let's look at the legal front. Where do you go from now? What you're talking about how the agreement that Owens Brockway has made with DEQ to either put in pollution controls or shut down by, I guess they'd have to shut down by next June if they don't get the pollution controls started. But if they don't comply, how do you move next?
I mean, if they don't comply, I think, you know, it's going back to the regulators and really trying to push them to enforce the agreement. I mean, that's who should be doing the enforcement work and should be keeping a close eye. And I think all of the attention that has been given to Owens Brockway, may be naive to believe that DEQ really has its eye on the facility and will ensure that it either meets this deadline or you know, faces repercussions for not meeting those deadlines. I mean, the agreement is includes a lot of things as far as if the facility were to continue to operate outside of just requiring it to put on pollution controls. I mean, they have to provide progress reports. They also would have to provide to DEQ like who they're the purchasing plan for the pollution control devices, get approval for that. They have to complete the installation of the pollution control by a certain date. And I think that DEQ made the agreement pretty tight. So there's not a lot of leeway for extensions as has been in the past when DEQ has allowed some of these facilities to, you know, say, hey, I need a waiver, I need some more time. And I think that's kind of how we would approach that, you know, continuing to work with our community partners and using our voices to really push DEQ to enforce the agreement should Owens Brockway decide not to adhere to it, which would not be great for Owens Brockway.
Ashley and Sergio, it's really great to talk to you. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And let's stay in touch and keep us posted on your progress in making Culley a safe, clean, and sustainably wonderful, resilient place to be.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Barbara. It's a pleasure to be on here and speak to you.
Yes, thank you so much.
We've been talking with Ashley Bennett with Earth Justice and Sergio Lopez with Verde. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and Cody XLP FM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KABU staff, who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KABU in the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. And you can help us by becoming a member of KABU or renewing your membership if you're already a member. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll rebroadcast an interview I did with Lauren Goldberg with Columbia Riverkeeper about plans to build small modular nuclear reactors at Hanford. We'll go out with some music by Abby Lincoln. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, wash your hands, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance when necessary and wear a mask.
Down here below, the winds of change are blowing through the weary night. I pray my soul will find me shining in the morning light. Down here below, down here below, it's not so easy just to be. Sometimes I'm really all at sea. You made me when the world was new and skies were blue, and I'm